Prescott. We're here at Prescott. Try again. We're going to try this one more time. We're at Prescott E-News Studios, and this is Prescott Talks, Friday morning show. And today we have Lynn LeMaster, who is our editor-in-chief, monitoring the comments section. So if you do have a comment today about our show and our guests, by all means type that in. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce Mr. Ken Bennett.
Good morning, Len.
Well, good morning, Ken. Thank you for coming in. I know this was short notice. It was like yesterday about, 10 o'clock? Can you come in and talk to Glenn?
When Lynn calls, I try to always respond. I coached a couple of her boys in soccer years ago, and they were good kids, and we've been friends ever since.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, I'm very happy to have you today.
Thank you.
Thank you. We always start off a little bit of history. I know a lot of people that are listening today know who Ken Bennett is, but there are a lot of people moving into our area, so maybe you may not know who Ken Bennett is, the history,
and you never know, because there's more than one Ken Bennett. So let me tell you about my history, and then I'll tell you a very interesting story about another Ken Bennett who moved into the area one time. But I am a Prescott, or not a Prescott native, but Arizona native. I would have been born in Prescott, as my mother was, but her and dad were going to school down at U of A in Tucson, so my brother David and I were born in Tucson. I'm the oldest of seven children, five natural born and two adopted, but we moved back to Prescott. I was supposed to be the son of a farmer. Dad was going, got his degree in agriculture from U of A and was running a cotton farm down south of Tucson, but Mom drove myself and my brother up for Christmas Eve, for Christmas, 62. And they only had one car, so Dad had to come up on the bus the next day. And while Dad is on the way up on the bus, Mom gets a telegram from the owner of the farm informing her that their son, the family son, wanted the job that my dad had as the assistant farm manager. And so they released him by telegram on Christmas Eve. So Dad shows up at the bus stop, and Mom's got me in one arm and David in the other, and a telegram in her hand saying, "You don't have a job anymore, honey. Merry Christmas." Yeah. And so the family kind of decided to move back to Prescott, and Dad went to work for my grandparents, the Bulicheks, who had a gasoline distributor ship company. And then a year or two later, he bought that business from them, and that became Bennett Oil Company. But the roots of that go all the way back into the 30s. The rest of the family was born here, grew up in Prescott, went to Yavapai College, later went down to ASU, got a degree in accounting, met my wife at ASU, and then we moved back to Prescott, and I ran Bennett Oil Company for 20-some years. And then almost immediately also got involved in politics. I had watched my father be active in the community, as well as my mom. Mom was the PTA president, and my cub den mother, and dad was in the Lions Club. And so I'd always watched parents be active in the community. And so when Jean and I married and moved back up here, I decided I wanted to be involved in the community. And I can remember trying to decide whether I'd run for the school board or the city council. I picked the city council and got elected in 1985. I was just 25 years old, and at that time was the youngest city council person. But I've since been replaced.
I was just thinking that.
As the youngest one.
Alexis
Scholl is beat me by a long shot. I think she was 19 when
19
she got elected.
Your life.
Yeah, so. Raised our family. I have three children. Our oldest is married, now has four of our grandkids, so I now have the best job in the world, and that's Papa.
Yeah, there you go.
And then I ran the family business, Bennett Oil, as I said, but I had a political career that started on the city council. I later volunteered to be on an education task force that Governor Symington put together. That led to an appointment. He appointed me to the State Board of Education. I did that for 7 years. And then I ran for the legislature and got elected to the state senate, served for 8 years, and finished out my last four as president of the senate. And then came back into the private sector, really wasn't planning on anything in particular. And then Governor Napolitano left the governor's office early and to be on President Obama's cabinet. that meant that Jan Brewer ascended from being Secretary of State to Governor, and she appointed me to replace her as Secretary of State. We both then got reelected in 2010 and served our what was considered our second terms. And then, as you know, or most listeners do, I ran for governor after being Secretary of State, but the state treasurer, Doug Ducey, won that primary and became the governor. So I've had kind of a dual career, business and politics, public service.
Long energy in the political arena, that's for sure. And I never forget, you know, first time I heard Bennett for Senate. Yeah, I mean, what a ring to it.
That made a pretty good campaign sign. And my mom was vacationing one year in Hawaii. There was a U.S. senator from Utah, Bob Bennett. And she's walking down a street in Hawaii, and she sees a shirt on somebody that says Bennett for Senate. And I had just announced for the state Senate in Arizona.
Holy cow.
She bought the shirt off the back of the person that was wearing it, went into the store and bought them another shirt so that they'd have something to wear. But Bennett for Senate made a pretty good campaign sign.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was very fortunate to win that race, and then I served for 8 years in the state Senate.
Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny that when things get changed around like that, because I have a friend of mine, Cory Gardner, you know, which is Senator Gardner in Colorado.
Sure.
And it's kind of funny on Facebook, people go, "You voted for this?" And he's like, "I'm a paramedic, man." So, anyway.
Sometimes your name rhymes with the office that you seek, and you end up with a pretty good campaign sign.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we're going to get into some of the nuts and bolts. We got our history. Let's talk about, I get a lot of questions on my Facebook page about different subjects, and one of them is recruiting young Republicans. Seems like there's we look at the polls, and right now Yavapai we're enjoying a 2-to-1 Republican majority, but we're seeing a strong push for young people joining the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to get your comments on that. What can we do? You know, we're getting a little bit older here. You know, I'm not done yet.
Right.
I'll put it that way. But keep our party strong. We need to recruit.
Well, and
your opinions.
You know, there is a young Republican. There are hundreds, or not hundreds, but probably dozens of young Republican groups around the state, mm-hmm. in the various counties and at the universities and community colleges. So there is an effort to, you know, bring young people into the Republican Party as well. But I think a lot of people, myself included, feel like some of the philosophy that comes out of our universities and schooling, school system, kind of somehow nudges people towards the left, you know?
And if you want a grade or you want to pass, yeah, exactly.
And so, I did not experience that in the 70s and early 80s when I was going, you know, I graduated in the late 70s and then from ASU in 84, and I didn't notice it as much. Of course, my degree was in accounting, and so I'm in business classes instead of philosophy and whatever, but I've even noticed within my own children that they're a little more to the left than maybe I am.
I noticed that at home, too.
But when they start to have real life experience. I've got a son who's started a business in a different state, and you know, he's calling me about employment taxes and the payroll this and goodness, Dad, did you know how much you have to pay in taxes every time you pay an employee a dollar? Yes, I mean that is something.
Reality check.
So, there's the sayings that, if you're not a liberal when you're young, you're mean or whatever, but if you're not a conservative when you're older, you are dumb.
Yeah.
Because sometimes life just kind of, and that wasn't the exact quote, but
along those lines.
Life teaches you some stuff, and one of the things is it's important that as a party, as a Republican Party, that we keep a focus on helping young people to understand why it matters that we believe the way we believe. Now, when I served in the Senate, I had a lot of friends from the other side of the aisle, as they say, good Democrats. Many times, you know, what we're trying to accomplish is not where we differ, it's just kind of how you know, everybody wants a good school system, everybody wants health care, everybody wants national defense.
Environmental, all
this stuff. But it kind of gets into the nitty-gritty details. And so I think one of the things that we need to do better as Republicans is make sure that young people understand, and they quickly, I think, gain this understanding on their own as life hits them, that it matters, the kind of policies that we adopt as government. And I think it reinforces when people make those realizations how wise the Founding Fathers were when they set up a limited government, let people do for themselves as much as they can do, and the government should only be involved in the things that it is constitutionally assigned to do. And when we get beyond that, and we start asking government to do everything for everybody, then we start to have problems.
And we get bogged down. Ronald Reagan.
Exactly.
Increase in independent registry too.
Well, Ronald Reagan's a perfect example of somebody who went from being a Democrat for first probably half of his life to being now thought of as probably the consummate conservative Republican.
The father.
Of the last 40, 50 years.
Yeah, I always remember, you know, his speech, government isn't the solution, it's always the problem.
Yeah, right.
And I follow that along as well. And you're right, I mean, in the schools, in the colleges, my son just graduated, or graduating with an archaeology degree, and some of the papers he had to write, are so far left, and he has to take a position of, why don't you like Donald Trump? And I'm like, well, why would anybody want to write that, It's so, anyway. And another thing is, and I always like the idea, young Republicans, that we do have a young Republican Party here. And even in our schools, I don't know if we have a young Republican school.
I think there's groups. Prescott High School, young Republicans.
Yeah.
At least there used to be, because I spoke to them a few times when I was in the legislature and Secretary of State. So
again, I think it's important that we at least expose them to the conservative values and see what, then let them make their decision. And usually, like I said, as the older you get, you kind of say, wow, Why am I paying this? Why is this going away?
Right.
Why can't I do this? Your freedoms. And nobody understands that better than I do. I came from California.
Okay.
4.5 years ago, right?
Really?
When I got here to Prescott, it was like, God, freedom. It was like, Martine always talks about the air being pure. Well, I just like, wow, you mean I can actually drive a motorcycle without a helmet? Whoa, it's like, there's all kinds of different freedoms that we have here. And personal choices, I think, is really... somebody's not telling us what we can do, what we can't do as much.
Right.
So I want to hold on to that as long as possible. One of the things, I was watching your, by the way, congratulations on being one of the top three names being picked for the replacement LD1.
Okay, thank you.
You certainly represent our values very well. And I watched the Board of Supervisors meeting. And one of the things, and one of the strongest points you have, Ken, is your budget knowledge.
Okay.
You have, I can sit here and give you I think there was like a napkin one time. You're able to explain the budget there.
I've used napkins, I've used Lego blocks, I've used Styrofoam blocks, I've used Kleenex boxes, so whatever it takes to get the message
across. Yeah, exactly. It was very interesting listening to you. You gave a 3-page report. And one of the things you were talking about is the budget. Mm-hmm. And not the budget, but the surplus.
Yeah.
We're told right now that we have all this money and we've got a $1 billion surplus and all this. And then you brought up PSPRS. And I know, and I don't have the current numbers, and exactly. All of a sudden that $1 billion budget kind of went sideways, But I wanted you to touch on that a little bit. We talked about PSPRS a lot here in Prescott. And matter of fact, we voted to raise our sales tax to cover the PSPRS owed, or the liability.
By the shortfall that Prescott has.
Is it getting better?
Well, Prescott's is getting much better because the city council is doing, fortunately, what they said they were going to do.
And they are.
Of that extra 1 cent, I think it was 3/4 or something.
Yeah, 0.75.
All of that extra tax that they've been collecting for a couple of years now is going to pay down that liability. And just so that your listeners and those viewing might understand, the state has 4 retirement systems. of which PSPRS is one. The largest one by far is ASRS, Arizona State Retirement System. PSPRS is for those in public safety, so firemen, police officers. There's also one called CORP, C-O-R-P. That's the correctional officers. Those are the prison guards. And then there's elected officials retirement system, although that's been kind of closed down and replaced with one that is just kind of like a 401k. But there's four main retirement systems that the state has. And when you add all of them up, the amount of money that has been deposited or earned by investments that are made in those systems is not enough.
Yeah, there's more going out than
coming
in.
There's more going out than coming in. And because of the recession in 2008-09, the stock market took a pretty bad hit. There have been times, not too long ago, when those retirement systems were more than 100% funded. When I was president of the Senate up until 2007, those retirement systems were funded more than 100%. We had more than enough money in there to pay the future benefits of those people that were in the system. But when the stock market crashed in 2008-09, the recession hit, they have really fallen on hard times. And this is one of the areas where I am most concerned, because I heard the governor say at the State of the State address this January, the state has a balanced budget and we've got a $1 billion surplus.
I heard the same thing.
Well, if you go to the comprehensive annual financial reports that are issued every year by the state of Arizona, you'll see that the underfunded, the unfunded liabilities in those systems has grown by over $1 billion in just the last 3 years. So the state is not making enough of a payment each year into the retirement systems to keep enough money in those systems so that when people retire, they can take out their fair share. And I think it's disingenuous at best, misleading, or even lying at worst, to say, well, we've got a balanced budget and a $1 billion surplus, but, oh, by the way, I haven't told you that we've gone behind in our retirement system by more than $1 billion in just the last 3 years.
You know, Noel Campbell used to use the word, you know, we have a tsunami coming at us.
Exactly.
And I still see that coming. There's been no relief. And, right.
Now, Prescott's one of the few, though, because of that extra tax that the voters agreed to, Prescott has actually reduced
their liability.
But the state of Arizona is going the other way.
That's my point. Yeah. So how do you keep, we're going down, but the state of Arizona is wanting more because you've got imbalance is what I'm trying to say.
Exactly, and that was one of the other points I tried to make to the Board of Supervisors. You know, they made a good selection in Steve Pierce.
Yeah.
Steve is respected. After I left the Senate, he came in a few years later and became president of the Senate. You don't become president of the Senate without being respected by people and doing good things. But one of the differences between Ken Bennett and Steve Pierce was that when he was president of the Senate, the state balances its budget every year. And sometimes when they get in a pickle, they take money away from the cities or the counties to help balance the state budget. And unfortunately, that's exactly what happened during the 2 years that he was president and did a budget. The state took over $150 million away from the counties to help balance the state budget during a time when this was 2012 or so, when the recession was over and things were starting to be good. In fact, the voters had voted an extra sales tax for the state of Arizona and they were collecting that money. They actually had a surplus during those 2 years, and we're actually putting extra money that the state had into a savings account. It's called the Rainy Day Fund.
Right.
And I just don't think it's appropriate during a time when the state has excess money and is stashing it away in a savings account. That should not have been the time when they continued to take $150 million away from the counties, and even more from the cities. So, you know, the state budget is one of the most important things that the legislature does every year, and it's one of the most important things that we should hold our elected officials accountable. Our state senator, Karen Fann, and now Noel Campbell and Steve Pierce, how they manage the state finances and the state budget is very important. And as well as the governor, we need to hold them accountable. He says the budget's balanced and we have this big surplus. But just in a matter of minutes, when I was over at the at that meeting, I made a list of eight things. We still are using accounting tricks and gimmicks. We still shift almost $1 billion of expenses from one year into the next budget year to make this budget year look better, more balanced. We're underwater in the state retirement systems. They sold the state capitol buildings back in 2008 or 9. We're still renting the state capitol buildings. We don't even own them. Every year there's a formula in state government that they're supposed to set aside so much money to maintain all the state buildings. They're only spending about 1/10 of what they're supposed to be spending each year to keep up the buildings. They're still sweeping monies from funds that are supposed to go to other places, shifting expenses to the cities and counties. If you look at the total debt, the total debt service, interest and rent and things that the state has to pay you, it's almost $400 million a year of just interest on all the debts that the state has. And those retirement systems that you mentioned, if those retirement systems don't earn about 8% a year, they go further and further in the hole. And so the governor has suggested that we have a $1 billion surplus, which I don't agree with, but he says that we should take most of that surplus and just put it in the rainy day fund, in a savings account. Well, the state savings account earns about 1% interest a year. But the unfunded liabilities in PSPRS and the other state retirement systems cost us 8% a year. Why would you take money and stash it aside where it earns 1% when you've got debts over here that are costing you 8%?
Nobody would do that. I mean, you wouldn't.
No.
I wouldn't do that.
No.
You know.
Right.
Boy, I hope you all had breakfast already. I'm telling you. I knew, you know, bringing Ken on, we were going to get some real life numbers and bottom line. And but you know what? The worst thing is we ignore it. If we ignore it, then it becomes even more of a... So these are things...
We ignore it when we don't hold our elected representatives accountable.
Good point.
And that's... Those are the couple of points that I wanted to make to the Board of Supervisors the other day. They made a good decision. I don't think, as I told them, I don't think they could have gone wrong with any of the three that the precinct committeeman from the Republicans in Yavapai had forwarded to the board. I think all three names would have done a good job, but they need to be aware of what happened under Mr. Pierce's term when he was president of the Senate.
Yeah. And speaking about that, we were talking, you know, I watched the Prescott E-News recording of that. I wasn't able to attend. I actually had to work that day. One of the questions kept on coming up was Second Amendment. Apparently, there's been some discussion about a lot of the comments that were sent to the Board of Supervisors were, you know, Steve Pierce wasn't a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I'm a Second Amendment guy. So just want to touch a little bit about that. You know, I watched it, you know, Mr. Pierce, or, you know, now Legislator Pierce said he has guns and I support the Second Amendment and he has the NRA, had Ollie North come and speak to people. I know you're a supporter of the Second Amendment. We've talked before. What were they talking about? Where did that all originate? Do you have any input? I know there was an email being sent around that, you know.
It was actually a board member from the NRA. One of the board members apparently felt strong enough about his disagreement or disappointment in some of Steve Pierce's votes when he was in the legislature. From what I heard, that these were not things that I initiated or requested.
A friend of a friend said.
But as people started receiving apparently some of the same emails that you did, they forwarded them on to me. They allege, and I haven't gone in to check because it didn't make a difference the other day, but they allege that Mr. Pierce had voted against constitutional carry. One I saw where he voted in favor of a bill that would have required background checks at gun shows, even if a sale of a handgun or weapon was between two private individuals.
Well, on that point, if I buy a gun at a gun show from a dealer, I do have to have a background check.
Right.
But if I see Ken Bennett at a gun show and we make a private purchase, then I think that's what we were talking
about.
So he was trying to curb that private purchase.
Well, apparently the bill that he supposedly voted for would have required that whether you were buying from a dealer or whether you were buying from somebody, you know, anybody there, that
private purchase,
you'd have to go through a background check. And I don't support that. I'm a strong believer in the Second Amendment. I probably don't even own as many guns, you know, as Steve Pierce does, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the Second Amendment is not whether I own guns or you own guns. The Second Amendment is about whether we respect the right of others to keep and bear arms.
Yeah.
And so apparently something he voted on years ago along the line was concerning enough to some people in the NRA. Steve's a member of the NRA, as I am.
Yeah.
But that's
not a hubbub, though. Yeah. I was watching.
I was surprised that there was so much of a negative push by email out of folks from the NRA against.
You know, I might know somebody who maybe pull up some of those voting records and debunk some of that. I don't know. We'll see what I can do. See if something come up. But again, it's just, you know, it's water under the bridge. It's history. Mm-hmm. And but again, I'd like to know. Just FYI.
How people vote tomorrow is usually pretty well predicted by how they vote yesterday.
Yeah, there you go. All right, I think we've hit pretty much all the talking points we were going to go, unless you have any other comments, Ken, that you may have. You want to talk about political anything?
I just want to say I'm honored to have had the confidence of voters here in Yavapai County, whether it was back in the city council days or when I was a state senator or secretary of state. I enjoy public service. I see it not as a political office. I see it as a public service. That's the word that's key to me.
Yeah.
When you're elected as an elected official, what you do should make the lives of those that you represent easier, not harder. And it's important that we hold our people accountable. I have enjoyed public service. I enjoyed, you know, being a... You know, Prescott's been fortunate in Yavapai County. In fact, during that 2012 that I mentioned when Steve Pierce was the president of the Senate, we had another Prescott boy, or Paulden. Andy Tobin was the Speaker of the House. I was the Secretary of the State. And it was about then that Bob Brutinel had just been put on the Arizona State Supreme Court. And he's now going to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. If you just go back for the last 10 or 11 years, we've had 3 Senate presidents from Yavapai County, 1 Speaker of the House, a Secretary of State, and now a Chief Justice of the Arizona Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And those of us that are lucky enough to get in those positions need to always remember that we're there not for ourselves, we're there for the people. And one of the funnest things that I enjoyed about being a state senator when I got to be president of the Senate, is helping constituents with problems that they had. If, you know, if something was not going as well as it could in one of the state agencies and it was affecting people negatively, I'd get calls. Can you help me with this, Ken? And not surprisingly, when the president of the Senate called state agency whatever and said, hey, I've got a constituent up in Prescott that's having trouble with your whatever, they usually straightened it out.
I think that was one of the biggest learning curves we had when we moved here was, you know, our elected representatives actually listened to us. They respond even. I would send emails or letters to my representatives in California, and it was going off into a dark hole.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, man, whenever I contacted a representative here in Yavapai or Noel Campbell, I got a response like within 24 hours, and I was just blown away, like, wow, these guys really do listen. And
they do. They do.
And I believe that. I talked to Jack Smith. He's my representative now.
On the board.
On the board of supervisors. And he does listen. You know, and we don't always agree. But you know what? Overall, I support Jack. He does a great job. And
just count on that. You're not going to agree with.
None of us are.
You know, the only way two people are going to agree on everything all the time is one of them has to be asleep.
Yeah. Good point.
And so... You know, even my wife and I just celebrated 37 years.
Yep.
We don't agree on everything, but we respect each other and we work it out and on we go. And we're blessed to have good legislators in Karen Fan and Noel Campbell and Steve Pierce. And when we disagree with them, we should be able to say that respectfully and treat them with the same respect.
And my wife's probably watching right now, and I just want to go on record that I always agree with you. Okay? So there's never a disagreement. Ken, future political aspirations, any?
I don't have anything specific. I've never had a plan that, okay, I'm going to do this so that I can do that, so that I can do that, and then go over there.
Suddenly.
I just take each step at where can I serve best.
Yeah.
I really like being a grandpa, and Jean, now that our grandkids live out of state, and you know, that's the best job, I think, going in the world. I'm not ruling out anything in the future, but I don't have anything in specific plans right now.
Yeah.
And as long as I'm, I think I have found out in the last two runs for governor that unless you have a couple extra zeros in your bank account than I usually do. You know, I spent $100,000 in the Republican primary last year and got 30% of the vote. But the governor spent about $11 million and got the rest of the votes.
Yeah.
And so my votes, I think, cost me less than 25 cents per vote, and his were like $25 per vote. But unfortunately, it's so much tied to money and...
Yeah, but you know what? The cool thing about you, Ken, is when you're called, you step up. Well, and I think that's really the key to a lot of people. And I talk about this a lot. You know, I'm not ever going to run for office, but I always like to show up. I always like to support, and I always like to voice my opinion. It's part of being part of this community, part of being an American.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, when we talk to our people, we can make a difference.
Yes.
And when you're... And if you're sitting at home and you are watching what happened with the LD1 and you're saying, well, I would have voted this way or I voted that way, great. If you're a Republican, become a PC.
Yeah.
There's PCs that are needed out there.
Let's
get involved. What I'm trying to say is don't sit back and be a keyboard warrior. Get involved.
Yeah.
You know,
that process was changed about 15 years ago to make the PCs a precinct committeeman, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or whatever. The process for replacing a vacancy in the legislature used to be just the Board of Supervisors made the decision all by themselves. Mm-hmm. But to make those that put time into helping the party by becoming an elected PC, and it doesn't take much. You have to get 5 or 6 signatures, get your name on the ballot. Usually there's not as many running as there are seats available, so you're in automatically. Mm-hmm. But about 15 years ago, they changed the law so that if there is a vacancy, you first have to go to a vote of the PCs, and they pick 3 names. And that's how Steve Pierce, and Sensmeyer and myself got there. Both Steve Pierce and I were called by leaders in the community to say, you know, even before it happened, if we have a vacancy, would you throw your name into the hat? Because you could hit the ground running and on and on. Both of us agreed, and so we both ended up in the mix. I was pleased to see Stephen Sensmeyer, young kid, 27. I can almost remember that.
Yeah.
And so it was a good mix. They made a good decision. It didn't go my way. I'm fine with that. I pointed out the differences between me and Mr. Pierce in a couple of areas, but we move forward. I support him. I support Noel Campbell and Karen Fan, and we keep
working. I think that's important. We all support Steve Pierce.
Yeah.
He's our elected representative now. So whatever you felt, Steve Pierce is our
guy. I'm still going to make sure that he addresses issues like PSPRS and the budget and doesn't get drug along this, I think, false idea that the governor's put out that we've got $1 billion of extra money in our budget balance.
Yeah.
Well, then why has our liability in PSPRS and other retirement systems grown by over $1 billion in the last 3 years?
And that's what they should be addressing.
Yeah.
That's what they're elected for.
Right.
So, cool. Let's move on. Ken Bennett today, 2019. I understand you're in some kind of a growing
hydroponics.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and every time I think about hydroponics, I always think about marijuana growers, you know, and all this other stuff. But
just in case my mom's watching,
that's
not it. No, I'm. People ask what I'm doing business wise, and because of my dad's death about a year and a half ago, I'm back on the board of directors in Bennett Oil and taking a little bit bigger role than that. I've got other siblings and my mom. And so working with the family business again. Two, I'm on the board of directors and actually the president and CEO of a little company that, it's a small publicly penny stock type thing, traded company that I ran into a guy years ago, and we're trying to develop a hydroponic growing system. And we've got a little prototype unit down at that abandoned dairy down below Yarnell in Congress, the old Parker Dairy. So we have an indoor growing system that can grow organic, fresh food that can be harvested every day. It's kind of like a little conveyor belt system. It's very, very cool. But you can grow fresh food. We're growing barley grass for cattle food. But you can also feed that to chickens and pigs and goats and sheep and it, just about anything.
Agricultural
feed. Yeah. So, and eventually we want to get into food for human consumption, but there's so many rules and regulations with the FDA that we decided to start out to try to perfect the growing system for food for animals. And so in a, because a computer controls the low energy LED lighting and the temperature and the humidity and the watering system, we can grow 24 hours a day. So what normally takes 30 days to grow outdoors, we can grow in 10 days. So we plant barley seeds at one end of the system, just on this plastic trays, and 10 days later we harvest foot high barley grass, and the cows can eat the roots and all, and it's just fabulous.
And there's no soil or anything.
No soil.
Just water that just is mineralized. So,
well, we put a little bit of nutrients. We put organic nutrients that we get from an organic company down in West Valley. We get our seeds from a Yuma seed company. So we're trying to keep it local, but we're trying to develop a system so that you can grow the food for animals right where the animals are located, instead of trucking their food.
All that transportation costs.
You know, most of the country lives off of lettuce grown in Yuma during the winter, but I'm told that the Yuma lettuce farmers lose between 27 and 29% of their crop just in shipping. Mm-hmm. So if we can learn how to grow food where the humans or the animals are located and reduce the shipping costs and things like that, and then we can, this system that I'm talking about uses 95% less water than you would use in a normal agricultural process. So we just spray the absolute minimum amount of water that the seeds need, and within 3 or 4 days they start to germinate, and within 8 days they're almost a foot high. And so every about 2 hours, the computer sprays about 6 seconds, just a fine little mist, and that's what they need, and they keep growing, and they do that 24/7.
So how much area do you need to do this? I mean, well, this, is this a warehouse?
No, this little system, the system we have is only 8 feet wide and 60 feet long.
Okay.
But you can stack them on top of each other and side by side.
Oh, okay, so it can go.
Right. We believe that in a 4,000 square foot warehouse, we will be able to grow the same amount of food that can be grown on 80 acres.
Okay. Wow.
And it'll use 95% less water. And all organic, no pesticides, no whatever.
Have you ever been in the grocery stores and you see, I don't know if you've seen it, but like butter lettuce. I remember, and I was working in grocery stores, so when it first came out, I saw it was in a clamshell. Now, a clamshell is a clear plastic container, and it had the roots in it, and it had been grown hydroponically with the same type of system that you're talking about. Yeah. Never seen soil in a warehouse, and they would do that. It was all organic.
Okay.
I don't know if Fry's has it here. I worked for Kroger.
Okay.
We had it in California. But it was butter lettuce, and when I heard that, I went, oh yeah, you know, I see a little bit of that breaking into the food, you know, into our food chain, but first time I've heard about it in the agricultural side of, you know, farming. And
well, we eventually want to get into food for human consumption.
Yeah.
And mentioning supermarkets, part of our vision is that you could have these systems on the top of a grocery store,
mm-hmm.
all tied into their point of sale system.
Yeah.
And it's growing fresh organic food, and they're harvesting, you know, it's tied in, and if your store sells 400 head of lettuce on Thursday, then you know that so many days before that, you got to plant 425 or whatever. And then if you start to sell more, then you just plant more or less or whatever's happening. But the possibilities of being able to grow fresh organic food that you're harvesting every day, not hundreds of miles away and you got to ship it and pick it before it's ripe or whatever. You know, I've heard people tell me that if you go to where bananas grow and you picked a fresh banana off a tree and ate it, you'd never want to eat a banana again because they're that good. They got to pick them green and ship them and all that stuff. And so,
it's the future. I see it. Again, working in grocery stores as long as I did, you know, I remember going and doing a report for one of the classes I took for a management class.
Yeah.
And it was this new concept of going organic. And everybody looked at me and go, organic? What are you talking about? You know, yeah. And, you know, I don't mean to date myself in any way. Didn't get this gray hair over yesterday. But anyway, that was one of the things. And now I see this hydroponics and what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've seen it in the grocery stores to a very minimal amount.
Okay.
But there's no doubt about it.
I think it's going to keep growing.
It. Yeah.
And then the third company I'm involved in is actually another local company here in Prescott that I've been involved with, Global Building Systems. And we're still alive. Some people think we may have died a few years ago, but we're just on the verge. But this company has a building system using styrofoam and steel for the walls and the roof. And we can actually build buildings that are super insulated and use about 90% less energy to heat and cool the buildings. And so we've just got a plant almost finished up in Cedar City, Utah. It's going to be the first full-term production plant that sells walls and ceiling panels for building homes and commercial buildings.
So those walls are already built, they're shipped out, and then they're just placed.
You just kind of place them together, glue them together, and the building is very tight as far as air leaking in and out. And then you can heat and cool those buildings with about 10% of the normal energy that, you know, instead of needing a 150,000 BTU heater system, you can have a 15,000.
That's interesting because we had Jason Giese on.
Okay.
And he was speaking of the same thing, the future of building.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking about how the walls are being built off-site and then they're brought in and they're just, you know, put together. So it's kind of
very similar. And there's other companies trying to do it. And there's probably a few that are doing it a little different, but ahead of the game to where we are. But we've got a patented technology, and there's about 60 investors from around the Prescott and Arizona area that invested in the company years ago. Unfortunately, we came out of R&D in 2008, right when the housing market crashed. And so we haven't sold as many homes as we had hoped the last 10 years or so, but we're finally on the verge of getting ready to do that, I think.
Fantastic. We have any other questions, Lynn? Are we?
Not right now. We don't. So, just anything else you wanted to add or talk about?
I hit all my questions. Is there anything else you want to bring up, Ken, or speak about, or address the folks?
I always like to end as I thought I was about to 10 or 15 minutes ago. By just saying thank you to people. I've been very fortunate. The people expressed confidence in me when I was just 25 and I got elected to the city. I think they were actually confident in my parents and my grandparents who brought me up. In fact, I can remember Steve Pierce's dad and mom wrote the nicest letter to the editor in the paper when I was running for city council. And so I'm sure, I just appreciate people that have expressed confidence in me back all the way to the city council days and then later in the state senate and the secretary of state. And we just have to be diligent as citizens, pay enough attention. I mean, the reason we have a democratic republic, and this is one thing you were talking about younger people, we don't have a democracy. The American government is not a democracy. A democracy would be we all vote on everything all the time and 51% wins.
And it fails usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the founding fathers they wanted the democratic aspect of the people being involved. But they said, we need a democratic republic. So the people choose representatives, and then those representatives go down and make decisions for the best of us. And that involves a responsibility as citizens where we not only have to elect them, but we got to watch and make sure they're doing what we want them to do, and
be involved.
Yeah,
and be involved. That's the key thing. Is being, you know, if you don't like something or if you do like something, I think it's important that we acknowledge people when we agree with them, as well as acknowledge them when you know we may not. But be involved, and that makes them stronger. It makes our community stronger, our country stronger.
Couldn't agree more.
There you go.
Thanks for having me today.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you for your service and everything you've done for our county. And again, that was great. You stepped up, and you were ready to hit it running. And I just want to say thank you as a citizen.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you, Ken.